You are listening to Cut Jib Newsletter Podcast. CJN speaks for, what is today, Thursday, January the 20th, the one-year anniversary, hallelujah, of the Biden junta. This is JJ Sefton. I am joined today. It's a troika. CBD is back, as well as misanthropic humanitarian. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, JJ. Good morning.
Good morning. CBD. How is everyone? I'm watching the snow fall, by the way, in northern New Jersey, so I'm enjoying myself.
It's a beautiful sight.
Yes. Of course, Ms. Hume is probably sick and damn tired of snow. It's the middle of January. How many feet have you gotten so far?
Oh, a couple. the snow's not so bad. It was minus 16 this morning.
Whoa.
I don't get sick of winter until about March 1st, and then it's like, that shit can just go away. bring on the mosquitoes.
Well, you know, yeah, it could be worse. You could be, yes, in the steppes of Central Asia or in Alaska or wherever. Or something in Maine, they used to say that Maine has two seasons, winter and getting ready for winter. But anyway, so yesterday we had the Potemkin press conference of our quote-unquote president. And all I can say is what an absolute unmitigated disaster that was on so many levels. But it's just to watch him stammer and gibber and shuck and jive to like prepared, pre-digested questions. It was just unbelievable. And then, I mean, the one thing, though, as I noted this morning, it's probably the first time he ever told the unvarnished truth in his life was that he said that, he outperformed all his and everybody's expectations, and which I guess is the truth, because I thought the guy was going to be toes up 6 months in, but here we are.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's been quite successful in destroying the country. Whether we're going to survive another 3 years is open to debate. As many of us feel that his bumbling idiocy was probably our only saving grace, that he was just going to screw everything up and he wasn't going to get anything done. And as we see, unfortunately, that's not the case. But I do have to, we should be fair. I think his physicians did a fantastic job yesterday afternoon or yesterday evening. I think that the cocktail of medications that they used on him worked as well as anybody expected. He was halfway loosened for most of that press conference. That's impressive, because unfortunately many of us have experience with dementia. That focus was something I have never seen in somebody who is probably halfway through his dementia journey. But, you know, I guess thank God for small favors that he didn't stroke out. Or of course, Ace was shooting for a massive stroke right on the podium, which I won't say anything.
Yes, I will say this, though. Yes, the chemical cocktails are a miracle, but it is amazing to me, and I observe that normally when he's talking about whatever he's talking about, could be any subject or almost any subject, and he's a complete, you know, he's a jabbering fool. But when it comes to running down the country and running down his political enemies and making threats, it is amazing how absolutely crystal clear he is and gets that point across. I don't know if that's medication or if that's just his nature shining through, but, you know, when he basically yesterday said that, you know, because Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema amazingly held on the filibuster and denied the nuking of it, he said that if the Democrats get wiped out in this coming November, then the election is rigged, which is risible in the extreme, but basically is just thrown down the gauntlet to everybody and given a green light to massive riots, the likes of which we haven't seen since last year, if indeed the Democrats lose massively, as is predicted come November.
Well, I found it. You just said something about him being crystal clear on his him striking out at the Republicans and the people who oppose him. Those of us who have knowledge about dementia and Alzheimer's, you know, we can have. I'm going to use my mother. She was the sweetest woman in the world. Growing up, I never heard her curse or swear. When she was in the last stages of dementia, I mean, that woman had a potty mouth. And she was mean. And I think that's what you're seeing right now. I mean, I don't mean to, you know, make light of or joke of people that have dementia and Alzheimer's. But, I mean, he couldn't get through a press conference where T-ball is harder to play than the questions that he was presented yesterday by the press corps. I mean, they did everything but physically tongue-bathe them. And if anybody wants to look at something that's really scary is that, you know, of course he's, you know, hostile towards Republicans. It's, you know, if this happens, it's Republicans' fault. If this doesn't happen, it's Republicans' fault. But, you know, we all laughed a number of years ago when TFG put the line in the sand for Syria. He put the line in the snow yesterday for Russia. Oh, well, if you invade, blah, 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 blah. And he was just all over the place. And, you know.
Well, I think that line in his mind is probably on the Champs-Élysées in Paris. Yeah, that line in the sand is, well, okay, you can, you know, it's just the tip. You can come into Ukraine. You can take a couple of miles of border or maybe 50 miles in. Or we don't really know, because I'm just riffing right now. The lack of preparation for that discussion was unbelievable. He was making geopolitical prognostications off the cuff because he doesn't know what he's talking about. The idea that that he can go on national television and speak about extremely sensitive discussions that he should be having with Putin, and then joke about it, and joke about, oh, a little bit of an invasion is okay, but a larger one isn't, is disgusting on so many levels. That's par for the course, unfortunately, for men such as Biden and for the Democrat Party.
Well, here's the thing. Is it the dementia talking, or is this the real, or do the people who are pulling his strings not know what the hell they're doing? And it's, you know, as we always say, embrace the power of and. I mean, chuckleheads like between Jake Sullivan and Samantha Power and, you know, I mean, Susan Rice is officially, unofficially not there, but she's got to be pulling the strings behind the scenes. I mean, my God, their worldview is just, is equally insane as his dementia. And when you put the two of them together, you have a recipe for disaster.
The problem, I think, is that we have no sense of balance between being the world's policeman, a la Bush, and being a pushover, a la Biden. And as JJ, you've pointed out on the blog, and I've written in the comments, I don't give a shit about Ukraine. My family's history in Ukraine is such that I'm really not too worried about them. I simply don't care. But I do care about America's standing in the world. And we promised them that we would defend them if they gave up their nuclear weapons. They gave up their nuclear weapons, and we said, suckers, we're not going to do a damn thing. And that I find vile. And it's a poor reflection on the country that I love. And there isn't much we can do about it. The problem, as I said, is that there is no balance between those two stances. Telling our allies to screw off and stepping in into every remotely dangerous situation across the globe. Where do we find that balance? I think Reagan did a reasonably good job. He had challenges that were radically different than what is going on today. But after Reagan, I see nothing in our history over the last 35 years that is even remotely impressive.
Good time to take a break. We will be back in just a minute. CBD, JJ Sefton, misanthropic humanitarian, CJN Speaks. Back in a flash. And we're back, CJN Speaks, episode, I believe we're now at episode 7 of CJN Speaks for the podcast, the first one for the year 2022. And Mizum, you wanted to make a point about what we were talking about vis-a-vis Russia.
I'm in the same camp as CBD is that I don't have anything for or against the Ukrainian. It's this yo-yo foreign policy that we have a tough guy like Reagan, then we have the two Bushes who thought we were the world's policemen, and we should have a coherent national strategy policy going forward. Doesn't matter if it's a Democrat in the White House or a Republican in the White House. If, you know, if we want people to remain free, we just tell, you know, the actors that they're going to remain free. It'd be nice if Western Europe would get out of their liberal think tanks, how they govern things, and you know, force Russia to stay out of Ukraine.
Well,
but you know, they're so dependent. There's, you know, Germany, for example, wants to go green, yet they can't go green, and they're reliant on Russian petroleum products. So it's just a really mess.
No, it's an
Is it bad of me to hope that Russia puts just the tip in? We sanction Russia, they cut off gas to Western Europe, and Western Europe freezes. To me, that would be the best of both worlds, because at this point, my contempt for Europe has no bounds. We have defended them since June 6, 1944, and it's time they stepped up, and it's time that they decided what kind of people they are. Are they going to be serfs in a Russian world, or are they going to defend themselves?
Well, there are two areas that you both touched upon. First, you know, Ms. Hume is mentioning it doesn't matter if you have a Democrat president or a Republican president in office, so long as we have a coherent foreign policy. Well, here's the problem with America today. We have two Americas. We have two visions of this country, or you know, one which is pro-American, whatever that is, you know, and the other one which is completely anti-American. And the incredible schizophrenia of what's going on and how things are so topsy-turvy is that it's the Democrats now who are itch, and the rhinos, unfortunately, who are itching to go to war with Russia, whereas, you know, it was all about peace, love, and understanding, and let's disarm ourselves, and, you know, for the last 40, 50, or God knows how many years it was. So that's insanity. So until we have a coherent national identity here in this country, which we don't, and we're losing it day by day for a myriad reasons, that's one thing. And as far as the Europeans, yeah, I mean, you know, my mother of blessed memory, who survived Hitler and all and the concentration camps and the death camps, she said, you know, when she came here, she said she had hoped the Russian army would roll all the way to the English Channel. She could care less about because of what Europe and most of Europe did, with the exception maybe of Denmark, did to its Jews. But that's, you know, that's another story. But it does point to the fact that, you know, forget about Western Europe. You have Eastern European countries like Hungary, like Czech Republic and Slovakia, like Romania and Poland especially, that if they banded together and formed a legitimate alliance, not the clown alliance of NATO, I'm not saying they could defeat or hold off the Russians, but they sure as heck would make the Russians think twice perhaps about invading their territory, because their attitude, they've been under the boot for generations, not just, you know, the Soviet era, but many years before, of the Russian Empire, and they understand full well the intentions of Russians. So, and that's one thing that perhaps we can hope for that might come out of this nonsense. Plus, if the Russians actually did cut off Europe's energy, that might put the nail in the coffin of the Paris Accords, or actually make them want to go green even faster. Who the hell knows?
How quickly can one turn on a nuclear power plant that has just been shut down? We'll find out from Germany in a month or so. That might be a new thing.
And speaking of Europe and its history, right here in the USA, in a place called Colleyville, Texas, we had an incident of we have no idea why it happened, but someone went into a synagogue and took the rabbi and three congregants hostage, and luckily was sent to his reward of 72 virgins.
Yeah, it frustrates me because that synagogue is a hard left Tikkun Olam synagogue filled with multicultural crap. I'm extraordinarily disappointed that this jihadist, this British implant, I don't know what you'd call him, this scum from Britain, didn't show up in one of the conservative synagogues outside of Dallas and get ventilated by six or seven of the parishioners.
Well, he probably sussed that out. That's why he didn't go there.
Yes, it's unfortunately, he probably wasn't so stupid that...
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, I always see signs, and Ms. Hume is waving at me, so I'm going to give him the mic in a second, but I always see these signs that say, you know, this is a gun-free zone, guns are not allowed here, and I'm thinking, oh yeah, every criminal sees that, okay, I'm not going to come in with a gun, they have a sign here that won't let me in, I better not show up.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I wasn't really pointing at you, oh. JJ, it was just like, I was making a sign. Yeah, it's amazing that you see all these shootings. And it doesn't matter if it's in a mall in Oregon or, you know, a movie theater in Colorado, it's, you know, a synagogue in Texas. It's no guns allowed. Okay, well, they might be criminals. They might not be the brightest bulbs in the pack, but they can put two and two together that they could probably succeed with their mission of violence if no one's carrying.
It's as simple as that. It's such nonsense on the face of it. And yet America closes its eyes and pretends that a beautiful sign on the door of a school is going to prevent some maniac from walking in and shooting up the place. And until that changes in this country, I think this kind of behavior is going to continue. Luckily, we are an amazingly law-abiding country, and in spite of what the media show us, these things don't happen very frequently. And in a country of 330 million people, the amount of gun violence, the amount of violence outside of several blue cities is minuscule. I think our murder rate is something on the order of Belgium's, if you take out the several top blue cities.
It's, you know, it's funny, you talk about, you know, violent gun violence in blue cities. It's all of a sudden now we have with the George Soros district attorneys and the decriminalization of crime in places like New York and Los Angeles, and especially Los Angeles now, all of a sudden I believe it's gun permits in these cities, especially in LA, are going through the, you know, applications and for FBI background checks are going through the roof, because we just had this tragedy of this homeless psychopath who stabbed this beautiful girl to death in a Los Angeles, an upscale Los Angeles furniture store. And then here in New York, we had some psycho on the subways shove a woman underneath the subway train. And it's funny, Eric Adams, the new mayor here, who so everyone was hailing as hopefully a sanity after 8 years of the Bolshevik, he's saying, well, you know, the subways really aren't so bad. And then all of a sudden he got reamed. And he goes, wait, when I said that the subways really weren't that bad, I meant they're really that bad. But that's just it. Maybe it takes these kind of literally tragedies and insanities where you're it's life and death situations, both on a personal level and on a national level, policy-wise, to wake people the hell up. To finally try to do something.
It won't wake them up, JJ, until, you know, and I'm not advocating violence here, but until someone like, you know, Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer actually have something happen to them that happens to the everyday American, they're not going to do shit. You know, they run around with their bodyguards. They don't work in a furniture store. They're on Capitol Hill, where it's probably the heaviest police presence in the world. You know, 2 months ago we had the two Congress critters, you know, carjacked. Well, they're, you know, on the scheme of thing, they're pretty low on the totem pole, so you don't hear much about that. You know, but if somebody would climb Pelosi's fence and do something and have the charges dropped against that individual, I think people would sit up and take notice.
I would.
I disagree 100%. You're being far, far too rational about this. This is what, No. I'm very serious about this. Ms. Hume, what you were doing is assuming that people like Pelosi and Schumer look at situations, evaluate them based on new data, and then change their worldview, change their political philosophy based on reality. And unfortunately, their reality is guns are bad, and as long as there's somebody at their gate with an AR-15, with an M4, everything is fine. And I guarantee you, if one of Pelosi's relatives got knifed in a furniture store in L.A., her worldview would not change a bit.
It's worse.
That is the terrifying thing about these people. They are the willing fools. Their worldview is complete and unassailable.
It's worse than that, CBD. I think people like that are so morally bankrupt and so criminal and so evil in their. I hate using that word, but it fits. What they would do is they would literally use the corpse of their loved one to amass more power and to further their agenda. There are instances already. I saw somewhere where there was a woman or someone who was killed by a black perpetrator, and I don't mean to point the finger at black perpetrators, but like whatever, 20 years ago, and the person, the father of this victim, who was white, liberal, wanted to have the murderer pardoned because he literally blamed himself for his supposed, you know, white supremacy and white guilt or whatever it is, for the fact that this guy killed his daughter. And I'm going, that's the mentality that we have to deal with far too many people. Some people who are not so, shall we say, inculcated and brainwashed with all of this rot that we've been going through for the last 40, 50, 60 years in our school systems and in the media and the culture, they're going to wake up and say, "Yeah, something's wrong. This doesn't add up. 2 and 2 is not 5 in, you know, in core curriculum." But the people who are the true believers are going to literally blame themselves. I mean, I think we mentioned this before. There's a classic bit in Woody Allen's Annie Hall where he flashes back to his dinner table where the mother is complaining that the maid, who I think is Puerto Rican, was stealing from them, and the father was saying, "It's okay if she steals. She's been oppressed all her life." And I'm going, "That's we laugh at it, but that's the mentality."
And the thing is that Ms. Hume lives in America. What he just described is how rational, normal people approach things that change in their world. They change with them.
I will say this, though, in his defense, is that although Ms. Hume and me very soon afterwards, in the next 6 months, will be residents of Wisconsin, Wisconsin's capital is Madison, which is the seat and which is a cradle of American insanity progressivism.
So what we should do is take up a collection and send Ms. Hume down to Madison for a couple of days, maybe get him a hotel, and he can walk around and chat with the people, and then run screaming back to America. What do you think? Are you up for it?
Oh, sure. You bet. Besides the great dental plan, I hear he's also got a great travel plan. So I'll go down there and put it on the old Ace of Spades expense account. But it's funny about Madison. I had an uncle of mine. This is back in the early 80s. So Reagan was president. And we were sitting around one night, and he had a couple of cocktails in him. And he said, "God damn it. All this talk about nuclear war and everything," he says, "I think they should put all the silos around Madison, and the first goddamn thing that would hit America would be the Russian missiles in Madison."
I can agree with that. Hear, hear, hear. Hey, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Hang in there. CJN Speaks, podcast number 7. Back in a flash. We're back. It's funny, during the break we were talking about, in the previous segment, about people and changing their minds, and, you know, saying, well, you know, Anne Frank said that basically she believed that people are good at heart, and I think it was Dennis Prager who, as CBD was telling me, he always riffs on this, but his most recent column, he was saying, no, people are not basically good at heart. You know, if the people were basically good at heart, you wouldn't have a Bible. You wouldn't have the Ten Commandments. So it's, you know, we need a strict moral code and that sets the limits and the boundaries of society, of how a society is going to operate in order to move forward and to evolve. And we don't have that, or we're losing that. And people are I'm not going to say people are not basically good at heart. People are basically people at heart. And you have propensities for good and for evil in everything you do. And just where are those boundaries that keep people, you know, in the middle?
I think you could argue that people are neutral, that, as you said, they have propensities for evil or good. But the desire for moral code protects everyone else around you. You know, religion is a perfect vehicle for that moral code. And you know, ignoring the existence of God, I'm talking about the concrete, you mentioned earlier, the Ten Commandments. They all make perfect sense. Follow those, and you're going to have a pretty good life.
You know, a full disclosure, I think I've probably violated at least 6 of them. not that thou shalt not commit murder, but I mean, you know. But as things go along, I might get tempted. But in all seriousness, you're right. George Bernard Shaw, where anything goes, soon everything goes. I've dumbfounded everybody with that comment. It's amazing. Dazzled you with my genius. somebody say something. Tell a joke.
We're talking about a clear moral code, an objective moral code.
Yes.
And, objectivity the assumption that that your observations are correct, that there is a clear physical world that we can observe, that we can appreciate, is important. And as I was mentioning during the break, I was in the hospital recently, and I was looking at the data about me, because I was bored, and I discovered that my sex was listed as chosen at birth, which I found bizarre beyond belief, because when I was born, the obstetrician looked down and looked over to the nurse and said, male, because of what he observed in the real world. There was nothing amorphous about it, hopefully. There was nothing unclear. And yet, we have today 57 genders, I believe, has that number increased?
I don't know. Baskin-Robbins has not changed the sign yet, so I'm assuming it's 57.
And we have the lunacy of people constantly redefining what is a man, what is a woman, what is sex, what is gender, what is this, what is that. Well, folks, pull your pants down, go look in the mirror, and you'll find out. And that's pretty much it.
And don't blame me if you don't blame us if you're disappointed. So but still.
Yeah. But you know, back to the moral code and what CBD, you know, learned in the hospitals, that I think most people want to be left alone. You know, let me do my job. I'll pay taxes. I'll bitch about them. I'll bitch about the traffic speed signs and stuff. I should be able to go whatever instead of this. But you know, people want to be left alone. But then you've got these radical minorities, whether it's the homosexual mafia or the trans whatever mafia, trying to shove their beliefs in, for the most part, you know, illogical beliefs, where you're born male or female. You don't. The other night I had on the old overnight thread, I had the a little segment called, you know, today's mental illness on display. And here's a chick, had her nipples cut off. She's got phantom nipple pain. I'm like, what in the world? And then I know a couple of years ago on the ONT one night, I had an article was about people who got complete until they had an arm or a leg amputated. And that story came, I found something on that just the other day, and I decided not to put into it. But if normal people think that if you have an arm or a leg that's functional and you want to cut it off, that's a mental illness, but yet they'll accept Jane, who's now James, once. It's just wrong, and we've got to come to a position in our lives where we say, this is right, this is wrong, you're ill, and you need something for it. This trying to get along with everybody, and there's no judgment, and there's no black, and there's no white, everything's great, that's bullshit.
You know, that's a perfect example. It's called body dysmorphia, and it manifests itself in teenage girls, except we don't call it body dysmorphia, and we don't celebrate it. We send them to the hospital because they're bulimic, and they vomit their food up, and they destroy their bodies, and sometimes they die. And we as a society have decided that's not good. So we're going to take this 16-year-old girl who looks in the mirror and sees a 250-pound girl and wants to diet. Okay, well, you're wrong. You're not 250 pounds. You're 110 pounds. You're ill, and you're being committed. And that is as society should be. We are doing the right thing with these young ladies and sometimes young men. And yet, we look at a 20-year-old woman who decides that her breasts don't belong on her body, and she has them cut off. And for whatever reason, we celebrate that. That's nonsense. It is suggestive of a society that is unfortunately irretrievably broken.
It is the result of, and if you step back to a global view, when you, and we were talking about, you know, a moral code, the basis and the founding of this country and of any free and healthy society is the individual and the nuclear family and the belief in a higher power that is above man, meaning God, and whether or not you believe in God or whether you believe in a higher authority that governs things, this runs antithetical to Marxist-Leninism, because the all-powerful state is your God. And so what is their mission? Destroy God, destroy the family, destroy the individual. And what better tool among many tools is one of them is by whatever your views on homosexuality and transsexualism or whatever, is to impose these views and to not only impose them on you, but to say that if you are against them, then you are somehow bigoted and racist, and to thereby claim that organized religion, you know, Judeo-Christianity or whatever it is must be either altered or completely disbanded or people who believe in the faith are persecuted, because obviously it's antithetical to their, you know, to not only to the homosexual community's freedoms, but to freedom in general. But of course, the ironic thing is, once a Marxist gets into power, these people will be thrown aside like in a heartbeat. It's just like Stalin's biggest cheerleaders and Lenin's biggest cheerleaders when the revolution was complete. Who were the first people that got executed? His biggest cheerleaders. So same thing. They're just, it's like any sort of political bloc that votes hard leftist. Once, God forbid, they gain complete and total control, they'll be cast aside, like yesterday's news, like the trash in a heartbeat. And that's the truth of it all.
Just look at Cuba and Venezuela. Homosexual rights in those two countries are a myth. And Russia is no great friend of gays. So,
well, you look at communism.
The idea that you know, the socialist utopia is going to embrace homosexuality is just nonsense, and it flies in the face of reality.
Yeah, communist China just had a whole thing where they were going to ban all films and media and whatever that depicted quote unquote sissy boys. Well, you know, yeah. I doubt very much where you have that. Who is that freaky guy with the long fingernails and the hairdo who was an influencer at the White House? And you're not going to have him, and you're not going to have, I mean, he makes Ethan Krupp look like, Steve Reeves in comparison. My God. Yeah, this is it. It's the demasculinization, the all of these things that have happened over the last 50, 60 years is, you know, I'm going to sound crazy right now, but it was a communist plot. But guess what? It was a communist plot. And there it is. Hey, we're going to take a break for 1 second, and we'll be back to wrap things up with some final thoughts on just what the hell is going on. Stay tuned. And we're back with CJ and Speaks, episode 7, the first one for 2022, and we're going to wrap things up, and we're not going to wrap things up without mentioning the passing of our dear friend and co-blogger, Oregon Muse.
So, Oregon Muse was probably the first person on Ace of Spades with whom I had a significant internet conversation, and I always found him just wonderfully witty and caustic, but at the same time there was this core of a deeply kind and generous and caring soul, and that impressed me every time I had any contact with him, and it absolutely came out in his writing, and I think it is a credit to everything in his life and the people in his life, and he will be missed, and it's going to be very difficult for him for us to replace him. In fact, we're not going to replace him. That's not going to happen. I don't know. It's just sad. I mean, he was a fine, fine man, and the world is a smaller place.
I didn't probably communicate with him as much as CBD did. We did stuff behind the scenes where, you know, he would forward a pet thread topic or a Saturday night joke or something. But I always found him he's a very, very pleasant individual. I know Easter weekend when the blog went down and Pixie was trying to get things up and running, OM had, you know, all these thoughts about, well, we can do this to make the blog better, we could do this, we could do that. And CBD was right, and said he had a caustic, you know, approach and writing his rants, but yet there was underlying was just a kind, intelligent man, and the type of person who didn't lord it over you that he was with the book thread, that, you know, he was a smarty genius, and you guys are just all, you know, little morons and lurkers and stuff. You know, he was just one of us. And when I got the call the other night, I was just shocked, because, you know, the last thing we had heard was that he was on, like, he was on the mend. And, you know, I thought CBD had a wonderful little thread yesterday, a eulogy thread, and it was amazing to, I didn't get to read it in real time because I was traveling yesterday, but to sit there and go through all the comments last night, and there was a lot of people that, you know, were lurkers that came out just to say, hey, we enjoyed his work, we enjoyed his company, and we're going to miss him, and we're all going to miss him. It's, you know, we can fill his slots, but we're not going to replace him. And I don't know if his family will be listening to this to this podcast, but, you know, my deepest condolences goes out to his family, because they lost a wonderful individual.
Yeah, I guess I'm a bit jealous in a way, because I really didn't get to know him as you, CBD, did, in a closer relationship. But my interactions with him were phenomenal, and his work just stands for itself. It's I think it was George Patton who said, when paraphrasing him from the movie anyway, we he can't see the sense in losing such fine men when we have so many more battles yet to fight. And he was such an incredible voice, an incredible, you know, just font of knowledge, and yes, his wit and his sarcasm as well, mixing it all together. He's not going to be replaced, but the fight goes on, and we were so blessed and lucky to have him in our corner, which, along with everybody that's contributing, is just, you know, it's just, it makes the website such, I think, one of the best, if not, and I'll put it out there, I think arguably the best one out there on the internet, as far as alternate voices for reason, sanity in an insane world, in our own insane fashion. And so I say, you know, rest in peace, my friend, and thanks for being there, and thanks for fighting the fight. I guess that's it for our podcast. So this was CJN Speaks, episode number 7, first podcast of 2022. Misanthropic Humanitarian, CBD, thanks for stopping by.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, folks.
You bet. See you guys next time. Take care.